This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
All right, one more. Round four. Democratic presidential debate. God, they're getting tedious. 3 hours. You had to be seriously invested to watch the totality of it. We have guests. We're going to talk about it. Tony Caney is here. Rod McLeod, both Democratic consultants. Chuck Coughlin, often Republican consultant.
Sometimes.
Yeah. You're eclectic, but and omnipresent. But my first takeaway, I think everybody on that stage had figured out that Elizabeth Warren was the one to take down.
Yeah, there was a lot of attention on her last night from the second tier candidates that, you know, focus on the affordability of her health care program. Buttigieg went at her. Beto went at her.
Surprisingly.
Yeah, Beto went at her. Klobuchar went at her. That was, I thought, one thing that was very noticeable. And the other thing that was noticeable was how much they didn't talk about Hunter Biden. That when they threw it to Bernie to talk about Hunter Biden, Bernie just went off on a completely different
Well, they wanted him to take the debate. And by the way, I fault CNN on one thing on this. This is the fourth debate. Every single one of them, they've repeated the same exact arguments about health care. We've heard them move on. There's a lot of stuff. They didn't talk climate change. They didn't talk international affairs hardly at all.
They covered, I mean, in the 3 hours.
Did we hear North Korea? Did we hear Iran? You know, I mean, we've beaten the same argument to death on health care. There's other things out there.
I mean, I would disagree. I think that, you know, we're freaks. People who are paying close attention every day. Most Americans can't name 12 candidates on that stage.
Don't quiz me. I don't know if I'll be able to get through them.
We're on Twitter. You could probably give you the middle name of each person. I mean, I think these debates have to be repeated again and again so voters can really understand. When you look at the polling on Medicare for All, most Americans don't know that that would mean under Bernie or Warren's plan that their private insurance would be gone. They'd have a government system. Most people say, oh, Medicare, that sounds good. Medicare for All sounds great. And you get these polls where it's 60%. Yeah. Well, then you start to explain the details and that number goes down. I think it's healthy to have these conversations.
I'm reaction to that. I think they're spending all their time talking about whether or not, you know, we're going to have public option or Medicare for All. When that goes to legislation, Medicare for All will get compromised down to public option anyway, so why do we care what the position is? But I don't think that was going to happen.
But the issue becomes an electability issue for the candidates that are holding it. The two candidates that are holding it are the most progressive candidates in that field. It's Bernie and Elizabeth that are holding that. You saw everybody else on the stage begin to walk away.
Well, that was the easy position to take because it sounds like you're giving people choices, ignoring the fact that if you want to bend the cost curve, you put everybody in one system. That's why our health care costs are twice what they are in any other country in the world. But making that argument, well, we're going to let you have total choice. You can, you know, keep the current plan. Well, that choice is what's making your current plan expensive.
It's one of the things. There's also a lot of people making a lot of money in the system. And, you know, are you watching the TV ads from the group Doctor Patient Unity?
Yeah.
They're trying to say,
billing.
Hey, these surprise bills, you know, look the other way. We still need to make a lot of money. That's a doctor's group. You've got doctors, hospitals, insurance companies. They're all battling it out. Medical device manufacturers. I mean, 17.5% of our gross domestic product in this country is healthcare. A lot of people getting rich.
Yeah. And not more than nine anywhere else in the world.
But the flip side, I mean, that was not lost on me last night as Elizabeth and Bernie were talking about it. I mean, yes, you're correct. There's a lot of money in the healthcare system that goes to places that are in the corporate world. We have a privatized model for Medicaid here in the state of Arizona, which arguably is what keeps the cost down, or at least controllable, because many of the true public options become much more expensive because there is no private market. There's no competition when it's just government providing the service.
Well, if you look at these European countries, they all have a different way of, you know, whether it's a single payer where the government owns the hospital, or whether it's a hybrid system, or maybe it's single payer for some stuff but not for other stuff. So it's we got a big, complicated economy.
I think the bottom line is this, that
Democratic voters care about health care a lot. American voters care about health care a lot. And so the conversation is one that they want to hear policy answers on. They want to know what to do. I worked years ago when we first tried to pass Obamacare. I was in the state of Tennessee. And my job is to go around and we talk to people who had terrible stories about what their insurance company had done to them, taking away their coverage. There was one guy, I remember, whose son, the insurance company, tried to take away his health care and said, we'll cover everything about your, except for your kid's leg. We won't cover his leg because he had a blood clot when he was a
–
And, you know, and it was one of the things that, of course, as soon as some attention was brought to that, they dropped that.
It's a fallacy of pre-existing conditions. They'll cover everything except that which you need.
But I think that, you know, these – one thing that happens in these elections is these candidates are out there talking to a ton of people every day. And I'm sure healthcare is coming up a ton. I'm sure that they feel like they're feeding the needs of the voters. And Rod, I'll tell you – the polling shows that people care about health care. That's an issue that Democrats are going to win on.
It does become the dividing line, though, between how you handle that issue, I think, from your true progressive and how much that's going to cost. That's what Biden and those guys were hanging their hat on last night, the $1 trillion price tag, and saying there's better ways to do this. Unfortunately, as Bob Robb pointed out in a column earlier this week, the Republicans are offering no options right now.
The Republicans have no option or let's cut some of this back.
The Republicans are not in a different spot than when McCain put his thumbs down on the floor.
Yeah, no.
It's essentially the same deal. We're at the same spot, which, you know, is a lack of debate within the Republican Party as to how to handle pre-existing conditions. I mean, there are models at the state level to do things like that. To Rod's point on surprise billing, they passed a piece of legislation out here in Arizona last year to create a ombudsman position for people to work through those issues here at the state level. But the federal government's just typically locked up in partisan frozen land.
In terms of the debate, though, I think what we saw last night was the center of gravity has shifted. Warren is clearly leading in some, but not all, the polls.
Yeah. And has the direction, has the movement.
Right. And people were really asking her to justify her positions. And, you know, I don't think Biden has come down. I think Warren's rise has been at the expense of all the other candidates.
Yeah, especially
slow,
Sanders.
Steady, real. Yep. It's happening in the states, too. It's not just a national poll thing. And I think a big part of it is that, like, to Democratic voters, she's very likable. People like her. And one of the challenges that some people face with, you know, who are Sanders supporters, there's a lot of Democrats that don't like him. Mm-hmm. And I think we saw that a little bit in the debate last night. It seemed like they were sort of slowly trying to pick away a little bit at her likability. Yeah. They were politely kind of like tapping at her,
It's all because we'll get back to this when we return. We'll talk about winners and losers here and when we return in the think tank back in just a moment.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're back with our brain trust. Tony Kaney, Rod McLeod, Chuck Coughlin, big winners and losers. I thought, you know, Elizabeth Warren had a target on her back for one reason. She's become the front runner. It was for the exact same reason that everybody took after Joe Biden in the earlier debates. Now she's the head of the pack, and if you don't take down the top dog, the game's over.
Yeah, I think that's clearly right, that the momentum is perceived momentum is with her. And the debate that many of the candidates that we talked about in the first segment started to make last night, including Biden, was that you know, the affordability of her program and Bernie's programs are not going to be successful at defeating Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And you saw a narrative develop last night that I hadn't seen in the first two debates, that Booker, Buttigieg, Klobuchar, and Biden began to talk about, we need to bring the country together. We need to bring the country together. And the separation was between Warren and Bernie and the rest of them on the stage. And so my big winner last night, I just thought in terms of narrative, because I tend to like him a bit, is Buttigieg. I thought came across with a stronger narrative. I thought Klobuchar had the best night for Minnesota Nice that she's had. I don't think that's going to make a difference.
She's on the edge of elimination. There are four who so far have not qualified for the next debate, and she is one of them, the only one that might have nudged herself up enough to the point where she may register. Tulsi Gabbard, Julian Castro, and Beto O'Rourke look like they're out, and she may be also.
I thought Tulsi had a really interesting debate with Pete Buttigieg and then Biden, where looked to me like she was actually aping the Russian talking point on Syria, saying, you know, this is a regime change war. Do you support getting out of this regime change war? You know, I thought people, particularly Mayor Pete, really kind of laid her out and said, no way. I mean, this is not a regime change war. This is about protecting an ally. You know, the way if we want to get out of this war, we have to negotiate a way out in a way that actually creates some kind of stability for these populations, not more humanitarian disaster. So she's definitely never going anywhere. But I thought it was really interesting to actually have that debate for 5 or 6 minutes about Syria. And I thought the Democrats in general really showed strength in foreign policy. I thought Biden did. I mean, talking about spending time with Erdogan and Putin and really understanding what those actors are doing. I feel like Democrats are a lot more clear-eyed about the threats to our country than we're seeing from, you know, Marco Rubio making excuses for Donald Trump.
They sounded a lot more neocon than the current occupant of the White House.
Well, more common sense. I mean, I think, I don't know if neocon's the right thing to say. I mean, Mayor Pete, he's a mayor of a small town, but, you know, his academic background and his experience is in that world, is in sort
of. Yeah, he was in the military. He served over there. So he and Tulsi both have very different reactions.
And I think that was a real, you know, I think he's obviously very good on the debate stage. He's very, you know, polished. I think he articulates things in a very clear way. But that was probably the most genuine, real, true moment. I watched that and I thought, this is Mayor Pete.
He was offended.
Yeah, he was upset.
He was mad.
I think he was sort of putting on some of the anger and some of the other questions.
He had to distinguish himself. He'd only get so far being quiet and thoughtful. And it was a moment to show some of – and I agree with you, Chuck. I think – If Bernie Sanders continues to slide, which may happen, Mayor Pete may slide find himself in the number three spot. And if Joe Biden continues to slide, then Mayor Pete might be the person to sort of take up the centrist Democratic platform.
I think there's a rational thinking line there. I texted that to a friend last night that it seemed like and I'm not certain Biden is sliding. I've talked to a lot of people that still strongly believe that he'll lose Iowa, lose New Hampshire, and then start his trail in South Carolina and begin to win because his support amongst the African-American community, which is going to be big in those lead-up votes to But I don't know, man. That's a serious – there will be a vacuum at that point in time. If Pete, for some reason, could win Iowa and pull that off, then
that would be a whole new game. You don't get that from a strong third.
And he's got a ground game in Iowa, as I understand it right now, that's second to none, that he's spending resources on social media and on a ground game throughout the state. And he's from the Midwest. I mean, you know, he's a Midwestern boy, and he's articulating that. So there is some there. But the other thing that I wanted to say was I thought – I didn't think Kamala did a bad job last night. I thought she did a good job. She made a really good play for women and talked about women because, you know, I think she's beginning to anticipate that there may be a women vacuum there if Warren fades and she wants to fit into that spot. And so I think it'll be really interesting. It's fascinating.
The one other thing I got, I thought Joe Biden looked older than Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders came back vigorous.
I think Bernie had a good night. I'm not someone who's typically been a huge Bernie Sanders fan, but I think he had a good debate. I thought he looked really good.
Especially for a guy who had a heart attack.
I was wondering whether or not he let them put makeup on him
the first time. The guy that looked bad was Castro. When I first looked up, I'm like, is that a scene from a silent movie era fan there? I mean, it was like the caked on white makeup, and I was like, what is that?
Chucking his makeup advice over here. That's
a guy on his way out.
But, you know, the thing – here's the thing. Last night 35% of all the donations on Act Blue, which is the online donation thing that Democrats use, we're going to Bernie. And on top of that, if you look at the two, I actually think these debates don't matter much right now. And I think the two bigger news stories that came out in these past couple of days are really good Bernie stories. You know, the amount of money he's got on hand is dwarfing Biden.
Yep.
Mayor Pete's, you know, I think in third place, or, you know, on that.
Doing well, very well.
And the thing about the dynamics of this race that I think are different than what we're used to is that Sanders has so many recurring donors and a lot of new ones added last night that he's probably not going to go away in the way that people think he will if he doesn't, you know, perform as well in some of these early states as people expect typically. I think he's going to be able to stick around for the long haul, and I think that changed the dynamic of this race.
Right, that's Elizabeth Warren's nightmare.
Yeah, and I agree.
Perfectly explained why it's a problem for her, because she can't unify that progressive Medicare for all, you know, left on the Democratic Party while Bernie stays in because of his money. And there's people who just love him. I mean, it's like it's almost religious the way some of his supporters talk about him.
I had a theory that Bernie Sanders sharing a lot of ideology with Elizabeth Warren, if he slid, that he might at some point drop and endorse her. And I ran that by some folks who are in Washington and know him, and they say, no way.
Yeah, he's made a...
ain't gonna happen.
He's clearly decided not to attack her. And, you know, there's a whole line of discourse...
And vice versa.
...where people are saying, like, well, at least Bernie's being honest and he's going to have to raise taxes. Warren isn't. Like, people are trying to kind of get the chisel in there and
they're holding
get those two
his
fighting.
They're holding his statements against her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know... he also, for a guy who had a heart attack 2 weeks ago, he looked great. He looked fine.
No, I agree with that. I thought he looked good. I thought he sounded good. He was deferential to Biden in that cycle, you know, in that cycle where they're trying to go after Hunter Biden. I don't think Bernie did anything to hurt himself with his base at all. And I think the conclusion here is that he's going to be around for a long time.
Yep. But... his problem is the trajectory. And sharing a vote with Elizabeth Warren, and she's...
Can either of them break the stratosphere of
Can you think of an instance,
majority?
Real quick answer, can you think of an instance when somebody slid down and was able to turn it around?
I mean, maybe Kerry.
Bill Clinton in 92.
McCain in 08. In 08, a little bit, right?
Because these polls don't matter until now. Yeah. Now is when they're starting to matter.
Yep. Okay, we'll be back in just a moment. Further discussion of the presidential debate here in the Think Tank.
The streets that lead inside. The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, next question, talking about the Democratic debate. There are four candidates who were on the stage last night who have yet to qualify for the next round of debates. Beto O'Rourke, Julian Castro, Tulsi Gabbard, and Amy Klobuchar. I said before, I thought the only one who might have helped herself to the point where she might be able to squeak on would be Amy Klobuchar. Anybody else you think's?
Well, I thought she had a great night last night. Look, I think, you know, there was a lot of candidates who were still in the race who weren't there last night. And,
but are they really in the race?
Well,
there are another six, but we're not.
Let me tell you, I lived in Iowa and I did a caucus, and everybody in Iowa at Christmas time comes and they take a fresh look at the race. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people who have money to spend to talk to voters are now going to have a chance to make their case. I mean, we're more than 90 days out before anybody attends a caucus or votes in a primary. So I think that December and January is really going to be where the rubber meets the road. And who's going to have the money to hang in is a big question. So Bernie's going to hang in. Yang is going to hang in because he's raising
money. He does have a constituency.
Yeah. No, and he's a different type of voice. Yeah. He's a different type of voice. He's one of these voices because, you know, the point he made last night about, you know, all the truck drivers in America, how many there's, I don't know, X number of truck drivers in America, and we're all going to be out of a job once we have self-driving cars. Yeah. And he goes, we have to prepare for that.
And I want to talk, too, about this $1,000 a month is can be easily portrayed as this kooky thing. But there's somebody else on that same stage who talked about a $6,000 a year tax credit. The difference in amount, okay, one is twice what the other is, but that's just the amount. You can always change the amount. How's that any different?
No. Well, if his argument is if you're just giving people money, there's no bureaucracy behind it. I mean, you can eliminate, and people are empowered. It's a semi-Republican argument.
It was originally a Nixon idea, family assistance program.
There you go.
and that bastion of liberality, the state of Alaska does this already.
Yeah, with their oil revenues. Yeah. So, you know, I've had discussions with people about it. If it's a way of eliminating the welfare state and just say, hey, here's your money, go invest it, make it happen. $1,000 probably not enough to do that, but you know, he's brave enough to go make the argument out
there. You could use that and take out some programs.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Maybe this is Yang's legacy, is that he's got us talking about this.
Exactly.
But you know, most of the recent welfare things have gone in the opposite direction. They say, well, we'll check that, you know, clamping down on food stamps that are used for other things. We want to control how you use the money. This is just the opposite. This is give you the money. We don't ask how you use it.
So speaking of people that are definitely on the way out, though, I thought the whole group jumped on Beto last night on his gun. I'm going to go grab your guns deal, which pointed to a direction that I think that's got to be done. I think he grabbed onto that issue as a way of trying to, you know, inject lightning into his campaign, and I think it's reverberated backwards on him.
Well, he's one of the four that haven't.
Booker's sounded like, hey, can't we all just get along here? And he was talking nicely about everybody and very friendly, but I just don't – there's nothing about that narrative that he's developing that – I really saw anything that gets there.
I did. I'll give him one little point just aside on that point. I thought he had the best closing statement.
Yeah, he did have a good one. Yeah. And then Castro, of course, I just don't think that goes anywhere. I mean, you know, we could debate Tulsi and Steyer. Steyer's going to have the money to stick around.
And he's qualified already.
There's more. It was striking me yesterday because I'll be honest, I watched the baseball game before I watched the debate, which I bet you a lot of people did too. There are more people on that debate stage than in a baseball lineup. I don't think the debates matter that much yet. I think the local stuff is going to make a bigger difference, and especially the way the primary calendar rolls out. But I do think that Democratic activists are really hungry for this primary in a way that, like, I'm a little cynical about, and I think it doesn't matter. And a lot of people are really paying close attention. And one thing that's happening is people are donating to candidates because they want to have their voice on the debate stage. That's a thing that happens. So people will donate, you know, so a donation at this point isn't necessarily because they support the candidates, because I want them to be a part of the debate. And Castro's one of those people who, you know, he's going to be on that cusp, but then every once in a while, if it looks like he's not going to make it, I think there'll be a surge of people who donate because they want him to be on the debate stage. And so, you know, if we're thinking about how this is going to winnow down based on the rules that the DNC has put together, you know, this isn't the way I think they thought it would play out at all.
Last time out, the Republican race was shaped by debate performances. That's clearly not happening this time.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And Democrats are just – we're different animals than Republicans in terms of the primary voters and how we function. Democratic primaries are ultimately about women over the age of 50. And so there's going to be a lot of money spent in the next 120 days talking to older Democratic primary voters. And by the way, when you see these polls and they're just I mean, they're polling registered voters. They're polling people who don't necessarily have an intention to vote in a primary or a history of voting in primaries. So, you know, you really have to look under the hood. And I think it's going to come down to who is connecting with voters in those four early states. And that is going to provide the shape of the race to come.
And when it comes to sort of voter behavior in these polls, it's a pretty common trend that older Democratic women make up their mind later in these elections than – you know, like four white guys like us make up our mind right there at the beginning. And so I wonder to what extent the growth of Warren and some of these dynamic changes in the election are coming just from people who were previously saying that they were undecided. Maybe it's Democratic women, Emma Duggan, who are sort of starting to get more engaged. But this – who knows what's going to happen?
I'll add another theory. I think she has been – across all the debates, I think she's been the star of the debates.
I think she's bolstered by the fact that she's a likable character. She's created this narrative. She's got a plan for everything. She's really digging in these town halls that she does. And I think that it's difficult in a campaign to chip away at likability, and that's going to keep her afloat until she runs out of money.
Question for all of you. Are we going to hear Pocahontas again?
Oh, yeah. Trump is going to go after her with that for sure. And this is one of the things she didn't handle well. Now, she's clearly made a strong emotional connection with a lot of voters. She's a very sensible person. She's able to articulate complicated ideas about the economy in really plain English. But she's going to have some problems too. And the problem that came up last night was she won't answer this question.
Yeah.
You know, will this raise your taxes or not? And she says it'll lower costs on middle class families. And I don't think that is going to get her through the next debate. I think there's going to be a lot more focus on that. And she's going to have to figure out how to return that serve. And she might be able to do it.
And that's the kind of thing that chips away at likability, is if you look like you're not answering a question when your entire brand is that you're – and, you know, Mayor Pete straight up said it to her.
Yeah.
You got a plan for everything, but it seems like you don't have a plan for this.
How to pay for it.
And she potentially could articulate saying this is the most complicated policy initiative that we will roll out. It doesn't make sense to put all the pieces together in the campaign. I don't know how the hell she would get away with that.
No, that's not her nature. Her nature – she appeared to me to be the professor you have in college that you really like to go to their class. Because she's really smart, she likes to talk about these ideas, and we've all in this room all run into people with great ideas, but how do you make that happen? You know, how do you do that? Because you got to put places and pieces on the board and go make that happen. And that's where I think this is right. We're the connection for her will fall apart at the end of the day, and people with more experience, including Bernie, at actually getting things done. You know, she trumped her, you know, she talked a lot about her consumer finance bureau that she created last night. Wouldn't give the vice president any nod of the head on that. But that was something that she did, and she was
It was a fair point. It was a response to him saying you never did anything.
Right.
Yeah, it is, and she did get something done, and she's done more than Bernie. Bernie's got 30 years in Congress. What bill has he passed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's a problem for him, and that's why I think.
But that's where he's at his this ceiling. Truce between the two of them. Right. I'm going to see if that's going to last. I don't think it can. It's too nice for both of them.
Strategically, you would think at some point, and the one who's got to do it is Bernie because he's the one with the downward trajectory.
Yeah, or you could argue she needs to bolster her upward trajectory because Bernie, as we've just said, has got a ton of money to stick around. Yeah,
you think the AOC endorsement of Bernie will do anything for him?
I think it's going to give him a news cycle. I think there will be more news stories generated about the endorsement than about the debate. You know, because it wasn't like a big moment. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether it's going to convince people who weren't for him to be for him. But, you know, if she's going to go and campaign in some of these states for him, she'd be a fine surrogate.
I mean,
people are going to see the candidate.
I'm surprised to see it, by the way. I think that, you know, while she was a supporter before, his trajectory is down. That's an odd time to jump on
it. It's emotional. They want to stand up for their guy who's had a hell of a hard time lately, and they love him. So I get that. But there was a really rough Democratic primary in Queens. Queens is a county in New York, and it was for the district attorney in Queens. And her gal lost.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how much her endorsement matters. And that's not a slam on her. Endorsements in general, we overplay them.
I mean,
Teddy Kennedy endorsed Obama. Hillary still beat Obama in that 2008 Massachusetts primary. Is that because all the Massachusetts Democratic primary voters don't respect Teddy Kennedy? No, of course they love that guy, but they also make up their own minds.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the AOC thing is strategically timed right now because what we were just talking about, he had a health concern. They didn't really know how he was going to play last night, although he did very well. Mm-hmm. And this was the adrenaline shot. Sorry to borrow that analogy after that to make sure that the trajectory had some life in it.
Maybe she could run a brush through his hair and help him out. I mean, she's the most stylish, awesome to look at member of Congress. I mean,
that would be funny.
She's so dynamic and.
Have Bernie come out in some African native garb, you know.
I'm just talking about a hairbrush.
Yeah,
I'm just talking about.
Oh boy,
we'll come back. When we do come back, I want us to elevate ourselves out of the debate and talk about the trajectory of the entire race. What's happening now? Where do you see it going? When we return for final segment in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, four debates. We're, 3 months or so away from people actually voting in Iowa. We're going to go around the room and get your individual take on a big picture, the trajectory of the race. Where do you see it right now? And what do you see over the next month or two? Rod.
Well, I think we have a dogfight right now between Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden. And there's a few other candidates who are have the ability to get in there and affect that. I saw a poll in Iowa where Buttigieg was in double digits. He's clearly got a ground game there. Booker hasn't really been doing much in polls, but he raised decent money. He's got a ground game there. Kamala Harris is in the hunt. So I think what you're going to – and then Bernie's going to hang in, and he's a clear player. He's going to continue to have money. So how these candidates – deal with these races individually. It's going to be one after another into New Hampshire, South Carolina, Nevada, and then into Super Tuesday where there's a lot on the board all at once. And it's going to be really interesting.
I think the big thing is going to be impeachment. And that is going to start taking a lot of the oxygen out of the candidates, out of the campaign events and things like that. And it's going to – there are many – strategists who think that we shouldn't be talking about Trump, we should be talking about the future, policy ideas. But you know, whether you agree with that or not, and I tend to think this is going to be a referendum on Trump. I think you talk about Trump, but it's going to be very difficult. You saw in the debate last night, they had to get an answer from Klobuchar on the impeachment. And so how that impacts this race, I'm not entirely sure. I agree with Ron on the dynamics of things, but the actions that take place, the people who are in the House and have an opportunity to be involved, if these hearings and there are votes on the floor, I think that they're going to get a little bit of a boost. And so the big question for me is what's going to happen with impeachment in the next couple months.
Yeah, I think that's a very astute observation in terms of what's going to be dominant on the news cycle. We know that. I think he will be impeached. I think that will they'll play that hand, and it will shape the electorate, and it will draw narratives away and attention away. But the people that will be able to be positioned on that to, you know, are as I think Rod just talked about. The guy he didn't talk about was Biden, which I think Biden begins to get lost in the matrix here of this whole conversation, unless he can come up. I mean, he said some things last night. The reason this is happening is because he doesn't want to face me. I'm the guy that everybody knows we can beat him with me. You know, that very confident statements about that. He talked about, you know, bringing the country together and doing that. But he's got to develop a narrative that is bigger than that, that talks more. Buttigieg, I thought, did a better job last night of trying to draw that narrative together about how to bring the country together. That I think that'll sell in Iowa, too. I think that notion will sell in Iowa. It is a referendum on Trump, but the way that's been talked about is not to talk about Trump, but talk about how to heal after Trump. How are we going to bring our country together? And we heard Buttigieg talk about that a lot last night. You know, Biden talks about it as if, I'm the guy. Well, you got to narrate that better. And so I see continuing problems for the Biden campaign.
One, I think, bad news piece for the Democrats is this. It looks like, yeah, I think impeachment's inevitable. That happens around the end of the year. And then Mitch McConnell is in control of the timing of the process. If it looks like that's not going to help the Republicans, he can close that down, you know, in 3 days. If it's helping him, he can drag it out over 6 months. He's in total control of the process, and they have the opportunity to rethink the calculation on that, depending on how it's playing.
I think there'll be an immense amount of pressure on McConnell from the White House and the Trump Republican Party to shut that thing down.
Listen, it's been reported that Trump calls Mitch McConnell 3 times a day. Any Republican senator says anything, Mitch gets a phone call. So he's not in control. He'll be in control of that process. But these news cycles are battering him left, right, backwards, forwards. He's spinning around. The wave is hitting the beam of the boat. It could all flip over. I'm not saying that you're going to see Trump get removed necessarily. Mm-hmm. But as a political matter, the Republican Party is really in trouble with this White House. I mean, he just basically became left of Tulsi Gabbard on Syria, Trump did, and the Republican Party is really pissed off about it.
Now, let me ask you about one thing specifically. Chuck, you may have the best insight in the room for this. The Jeff Flake statement, 35 – in a secret vote, 35 Republican senators would vote against him. Does that ring true to you?
I think there is a ring of credibility to that. I mean, the tangible thing you can see is the amount of retirements that are going on in the House and in the Senate. People are just saying, done. enough of this, which would tell you a lot about how, you know, quality employment, you know, how much fun am I having at my job these days? And so a lot of people are walking away
because it's not fun. Prospects of being in the minority.
Right. Prospects of being in the minority continued in the House, mm-hmm. unquestionably, and then particularly maybe in the Senate. And the other thing we got to remember, McConnell's on the ballot. McConnell, mm-hmm. you know, not, you know, Kentucky's a plus 20 some state.
Yeah.
But,
it's about as safe as it comes.
It's about as safe as it comes. But
land.
They're going to pour a ton of money into that race to tie him down, to keep him there. So the longer this impeachment conversation goes on, I think is worse for the Republicans. They're going to have to get it done and dispatch it.
How quickly do you think they can do it? January?
I don't know. I'm not. You got to get Paul Bender, one of your buddies, in here to talk about.
I know what Paul say.
Yeah,
but we'll say they can do whatever they want.
Yeah,
there's no appeal to what they do.
Which would be 2 or 3 days, and it'd be done. Right after the impeachment proceeding, the vote in the House goes to the Senate. He'll accept the accept it, and they'll dismiss the charges.
You know, by then Trump will have made another public confession on the evening news. Nancy will bring another impeachment charge.
The other thing I think McConnell will say is, We're under a year away from an election. I want to let the American people decide this. It's not appropriate, which I think might sell with a lot of people. That once the impeachment goes down, and it'd be a safe spot for a lot of Republicans to go.
It is a reasonable thing in the middle of a campaign. It is a reasonable point. Not, I mean, on the other hand, that on the House side, I think you could say this is offensive to our norms, and we're compelled to take an impeachment vote, but. Then in the Senate, the argument is the people are going to vote anyway.
Yep.
We've made our statement. Now we let the process continue.
The debate will play out that way.
Wow. Okay. Front runner. Is it Elizabeth Warren right now, Chuck?
Yeah, I think she is. She's perceived as that. But as these guys made very cogent mm-hmm. cases, it's a very fluid environment. Bernie and her are fishing in the same pond. Buttigieg seems to have more momentum, and Biden's still sticking around. And then you got the Yang. You got too many pieces of the puzzle to think. But yeah, she's seems to be leading there right now.
Rod?
Biden is the front runner. His votes, he's taken punch after punch after punch, and he hasn't slipped at all. Now, that might not – he might not survive the Super Tuesday, but he's until then.
Tony?
I say Biden, and I don't think Warren and Sanders overlap quite as much as Chuck thinks. I think that this is a very dynamic race, and anything can happen.
Yeah. I think it's Warren at this point. I think she's the one to beat, and she's been formidable in the debate. Now, I think the other thing that's going to happen is once people start voting in Iowa, none of the polls will matter. It's a whole new game, and hence the ground game and all that business. Iowa and New Hampshire, and then we'll forget about polls, and it'll be potentially a new landscape if somebody comes up with a surprise. Final word. Thank you very much. Tony, Kenny, Rod McCloy, Chuck Coughlin. See you next week in the Think Tank.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.